Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Hard to believe, but today is Friday, the 4th of March, 2022. And this is actually an emergency podcast today because I heard through the grapevine there's been a new sighting of, yes, Mr. F-Bar. And that information came from me, from Dubai-based U.S. tax lawyer, Virginia Latora Jeeker, who I think of as the world's renowned FBARologist. And therefore, we put together this very, very quickly. Virginia, how are you today?
Hey, John, I'm doing well and hope that you are too.
I am. This Mr. FBAR, just, I mean, the more you look for him, the more you find him, the more you, he is just like everywhere, isn't he?
Unfortunately, yes. And the deeper you dig, the more you find that he pops up in the most unexpected places.
Unbelievable. Well, you know, last week we talked about how Mr. F-Bar wreaks havoc with trusts. And, you know, we talked about specifically what the trust reporting obligations might be. And that was bad. But, you know, Virginia, wherever you have a trust, you have people associated with that trust. In this case, we have the grantor, the person who sets up the trust, sometimes called the settlor. We have beneficiaries of the trust, and we have a trustee. So we've got all these people who are involved in the trust. And today, our discussion, I think, based on your post from yesterday, is to talk about any FBAR responsibilities that might arise just from having anything to do with the trust at all. Is that a fair statement?
That's a very good statement, John, because a lot of times people are surprised when they do not actually own a foreign financial account to learn that they have an FBAR duty to file an FBAR reporting the account, the foreign account owned by another party. And this can often happen in the case of trusts. So I think it's a good idea to examine all of the different participants and see who might have to file an FBAR covering what.
You know, I think that's a great idea. And I really liked your post yesterday. But, you know, I think it might be a great idea for listeners to just, in its most basic terms, talk about what a trust is and like who the actual people are who are surrounding the trust. So could you help us with that?
Right. Well, I think the best way to think of a trust is that the trust itself is considered a separate entity of some sort from the different people associated with it. The problem with that basic concept is that you have a bifurcation, a splitting of legal ownership to certain assets and what's called beneficial ownership to certain assets. So taking a simple case, let's say there's a father who wants to set up what we call a trust for his children. And he has certain assets. He has stocks and financial accounts and other assets that he wishes to put into this trust for the children. So what he must do is decide under which jurisdiction's laws he's going to set up the trust. So let's take a simple case and say he's in the US and he wants to set up a trust under Wyoming law. That's a popular destination. So he takes the assets that he wants to put into the trust and actually turns legal title to these assets over to a trustee who is charged with the duty to conserve and take care of the assets and manage them in a way that is beneficial for the children. And the father, when he turns the legal title over, he will, generally speaking, be making a completed gift of these assets into the trust. And he will have certain U.S. tax consequences on account of this entire transaction, but we're not going to get into those. We just want to understand the simple concept. Father owned these assets, wants his children to benefit from them. They're too young or he has other concerns. So he says, I'm going to put them into a trust. The trustee will be in charge of taking care of them. There is a big trust document, maybe, you know, 50 to 100 pages long, which lays out what the father wants done with these assets and what the laws say under the laws of Wyoming that the trustee can and cannot do, what powers he may have to deal with the assets and so forth. So the father in this case is the settlor or the grantor of the trust. He's the one creating it and giving up title and all ownership to the assets. And he's giving them, as I said, legal title to the trustee. So the trustee's name is now put onto these stocks and bonds and financial accounts, et cetera. And it will be something like the John Smith Family Trust with Mr. XY as trustee. And the trustee will then know his duties under this agreement. And the beneficiaries of the trust will be the children. And the trust document will say, for example, how the settlor would like the trustee to maybe distribute income to the children or not. And if he should invade principal for under certain circumstances, for example, if one of the children needs special education or special medical care, et cetera. So those are your main players. And the important thing to remember is that even though the trustee now holds legal title to the assets, the trustee does not have what's called beneficial ownership of the assets. The beneficial ownership is really in the beneficiaries who will have the ability to enjoy the fruits of this trust arrangement. They're the ones who will get all of the benefit from the income and assets that are in the trust. So the trustee just has this duty to conserve the trust property and to manage it for these beneficiaries who do not share in that responsibility. I think that's a pretty good way of explaining the trust arrangement.
All right, now I think that that's an excellent way of explaining it. So we've got basically three, we have the trust, which is a separate entity, and we have the three parties who have different, play different roles. The first is the settlor grantor, person who creates it, gives up the legal title to the second person, the trustee, who takes the legal title and is the fiduciary, manages according to the terms of the trust. And then we have the beneficiary or beneficiaries who have the, well, beneficial title, the real interest in it. And this whole group of people are all related to this trust. And the point is that, oh my God, each and every one of them might have a meeting with Mr. F. Barr. So let's start, Virginia. And I think it might be worth reminding listeners from last week that any trust created under the laws of the United States would be a US person. And we talked last week about the F. Barr responsibilities for that US person trust. Moving over though to the issue of the other three parties, Virginia, what FBAR responsibilities might they have in relation to this trust, perhaps starting with the trustee?
Okay. I think it's just worthwhile to remind our listeners that when we have a U.S. trust, as you have correctly stated, that is a U.S. person for purposes of FBAR. So FBAR is completely distinct from the Internal Revenue Code. The FBAR is governed by the Bank Secrecy Act, which is found in Title 31 of the US Code, and the Internal Revenue Code, which is completely separate, is found in Title 26 of the US Code. So you can have, as was discussed in our last podcast and in my last blog post, you can have a US trust set up, for example, as I said, under the laws of Wyoming, that will be treated as a US person for FBAR purposes without question. Full stop. However, that same U.S. trust might not be treated as a U.S. person for income tax purposes under the Internal Revenue Code. So I just want people to remember this dichotomy, that they are two very distinct laws.
And not only that, but we start by reading the FBAR law, Title 31, and we go only to Title 26 when specifically directed to, correct?
That's correct. That's correct. The FBAR legislation is very sparse, the actual law. It directs you over to certain Treasury regulations, which give you more substance to what is required under the FBAR rules. And then we have, of course, more information in the actual instructions to the FBAR. You may find little bits and pieces from IRS guidance. Unfortunately, the FBAR guidance is not in one cohesive place. Now, having said that, let us move on to the different players in the trust arrangement. So we have the trustee, the beneficiaries, and the grantor. Let's start with the trustee. Before we jump into his obligations or its obligations, if it's a corporate trustee, let's review. When does a U.S. person need to file an FBAR reporting an account? So the U.S. person with a financial interest in or signature authority over a foreign account has to report that on the FBAR, assuming they meet a $10,000 threshold as the maximum aggregate value of all foreign accounts. That 10,000 threshold is met at any day during the calendar year. So for FBAR purposes, a U.S. person can be treated as having a financial interest in an account owned by an entity with which that person has a kind of relationship. We know that the trustee clearly has a very significant relationship with the trust. And in the case of a trustee, I cannot imagine that he would not have to report the trust's foreign accounts on the trustee's personal FBAR. So that trustee is either going to be considered to have a financial interest in the account, or he's going to have to report because he has signature authority over the account. Either way, he's going to have to report the trust's foreign accounts on his own personal FBAR.
Now, that's a good reason to not be a trustee, isn't it?
Well, it's it causes a lot of concern for trustees, absolutely. Now, remember, the trustee has to be a U.S. person in order to trigger this obligation. So if you have a foreign trustee, a non-U.S. citizen, for example, non-resident, he does not need to file an FBAR reporting this trust account over which he is a trustee because he's not a U.S. person.
Well, the trust itself would presumably have to report the same account.
Oh, the trust as an entity, yes, would have to. And who would be the person actually signing that would be the trustee. But it's an FBAR for the trust reporting the trust's accounts that it owns.
Right.
So if we look at this from the perspective of a U.S. person who is the trustee of a trust that has foreign accounts, that trustee, the U.S. person, let's just pretend he has a bank account in Switzerland that he's reporting on the FBAR. That's his own personal account. Now, as trustee of this XYZ trust, this trust may also have foreign accounts that the U.S. person now has to put on his own personal FBAR, along with that Swiss account that he's reporting that he owns individually. So he's got to be very careful and make sure he's got everything covered. So for the trustee, it's fairly simple. There's no way I can see he doesn't have to report foreign accounts owned by the trust. You think that's
so
a fair statement?
The trustee just assumes, okay, that part of the role of being trustee is to report the trust financial accounts on his or her own FBAR.
Absolutely. I think that's quite simple.
Okay.
Now, let's move on to...
grantor?
Why not? Let's move on to the grantor. So the actual FBAR regulations set out a specific rule that can cause a trust grantor to be deemed to have what's called a financial interest in foreign financial accounts owned by the trust. So just go back, remember the example I gave with the father who has now turned over all of these assets to the trustee. He's the grantor of the trust. we have to ask, does he still have to report on his personal FBAR, any of these foreign financial accounts owned by the trust? After all, he gave everything away, right? Well, it depends. So the grantor, he has to file with respect to foreign financial accounts owned by the trust. If it is a grantor trust, that's a special term of art in the tax rules, it's a grantor trust of which that US person is the grantor and has an ownership interest in the trust for US income tax purposes. So this now is an area of the FBAR regulations that refers you specifically over to the US Internal Revenue Code. It takes you over from Title 31 of the BSA, Bank Secrecy Act, over to the Internal Revenue Code and asks you to determine, does this person who was the grantor of a trust have an ownership interest in the trust for US federal income tax purposes? Under specific code sections, they give you the code sections 671 through 679 and relevant Treasury regulations. These are commonly called the grantor trust rules. Let's make a simple case. If the grantor has retained a power, for example, to revoke the trust, he will be considered to have an ownership interest for these purposes of the Internal Revenue Code. If the grantor of the trust has reserved the right to determine who can get how much income at some point in time, he will be treated as having an ownership interest in the trust. Or if the grantor himself gets benefits from the trust. For example, if he gets the income, some of the income during his lifetime as a trust beneficiary, he will be treated as having this ownership interest. So if it is a grantor trust, then he has to report, the grantor has to report if he is a US person, the foreign financial accounts that are owned by the trust under this specific rule.
Oh, you know, that's really extraordinary, but I think it's easier to understand. The grantor trust rules in 671 to 679 really are just examples under the Internal Revenue Code where the trust is being disregarded for tax purposes, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's correct.
So it's as though the Internal Revenue Code and that part of it is sort of pretending that the trust doesn't even really exist. In other words, it's saying, well, there really wasn't a separate entity that was created.
That's right. But on the other hand, John, you have to remember that that rule about the disregarded entity doesn't count when the IRS doesn't want it to count. Because if you have a US trust that's a disregarded entity in this example, the trust itself can still be on the hook and has to file an FBAR with regard to these foreign financial accounts.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the let's put it this way. The reporting rules give the Treasury its cake and lets them eat it too, okay?
All right, so the message would be, though, that, you know, if you're creating a trust and really, okay, you're still getting the benefits from the trust, then you better be careful because you may well have to file an FBAR, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. All right, so we've talked about the trustee, we've talked about the grantor, settlor, the person who sets it up. Now, what about these beneficiaries?
Okay, so let's go back and look at the rule, what it says. It says a US person has a financial interest in a foreign account for which the owner of record or holder of legal title is a trust in which the US person has a greater than 50% present beneficial interest in the assets or the income of the trust for the calendar year. So we have to remember FBAR, first of all, is an annual form that needs to be filed. And in the case of the beneficiaries, if they have a greater than 50% present beneficial interest in the assets or income of the trust that year, then the beneficiary must file on his personal FBAR, the foreign financial accounts owned by the trust.
Now, Virginia, you say for that year. So I infer from that that this could change from year to year, depending on the difference in yearly distributions. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And this is the sad thing that many people are not aware of. And further, that they may not be aware, a lot of times they don't know that they've been given over 50% of the assets or income of the trust.
That's right.
You know, they may not know all of these financial accounts. And some jurisdictions don't even allow the beneficiaries to have access
to the terms of the trust.
To even all of that information. Yes.
Think of it, right? Being the beneficiary, being the discretionary beneficiary of a trust and not knowing what percent interest you actually have in it. I mean, you wouldn't have enough information to know whether that was, we'll use a word, F-barrable, would you?
No, you wouldn't know. How would you know you got over 50% of the current income of the trust for that year?
It's extraordinary. It's absolutely extraordinary. Yep.
So that's a problem. Now, in a helpful reporting exception to FBAR, the trust beneficiary, remember now, beneficiary, not the grantor, not the trustee, the trust beneficiary of a, he need not report a foreign account that's owned by a trust if the trust or the trustee is a U.S. person and reports the account on an FBAR. So, in our example, if the trustee was a U.S. person and reported the foreign financial accounts on his own FBAR, then the beneficiary who didn't know he got over 50% of the income from the trust in that particular year, he can escape an FBAR duty and penalties, provided that the trustee is a U.S. person and reported the account on the trustee's FBAR. Similarly, if the trust itself was a U.S. person and reported the trust accounts on the trust's FBAR. So there is that helpful exception.
Would that mean then when, you know, somebody gets this huge distribution from a trust, rather than sending a thank you note, they should send a note saying, listen, I just got this thing and I really got to know two things, okay? First of all, is the trustee a U.S. person here? And secondly, was an FBAR filed?
That's correct. That's one. He can also ask, is the trust a U.S. person for the FBAR rules? And
what about simplifying and just say, I just received this $1 million distribution. All right. And really all I want to know is, was the account that this came from, was this reported on an FBAR anywhere?
I guess you could do that, but I would be more precise, because what if, for example, the grantor reported it on his FBAR?
Then perhaps the suggestion to the trustee for next year, please specify which persons or entities have reported this on an FBAR.
That's a good one.
It's awful. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the point is, it's extremely detailed.
We're at war with each other, right?
And you can make a mistake very, very easily here. So, I don't know, John, do you want to go through an example that was in my post? Because that, I think, gives people a lot of understanding about how complicated it can get. Is that too complex, perhaps?
I think it's extremely complex for a podcast, but with that caveat, let's go for it.
Okay. So here are our facts. We have a trust created under Wyoming law. And we all now remember the simple rule, simply because it's been formed under U.S. law, it's a U.S. person for FBAR, regardless of the fact it may be a foreign grantor trust and disregarded for U.S. tax purposes. So we've got in our example, this trust being set up by a gentleman called Abdullah, who's a non-resident alien of the United States. He sets up a grantor trust under Wyoming law. And the trust is fully revocable by Abdullah alone. And so it's going to be a foreign grantor trust owned by Abdullah for US income tax purposes. So the entity's disregarded. But for FBAR, we know it's a US trust. And Joanne is a US citizen. She's the sole trustee of the trust. There are two US citizen beneficiaries who are Abdullah's nephews, Hamad and Salim. And the trustee, Joanne, has absolute discretion over the amounts of any distributions to these US beneficiaries. Upon the death of the survivor of the two nephews, the remainder will go to the children who are all US citizens. The trust owns a couple of assets. The trust owns a brokerage account in London. So that's going to be a foreign financial account. The trust also owns 100% of a BVI corporation. Now, the shares in that corporation are not a foreign account, even though they're foreign shares. That is not an account reportable on FBAR. So the trust owns 100% of the BVI corporation. Joanne is the sole director and officer of that corporation in the BVI.
Okay, well, let's break it down one person at a time.
Mm-hmm. The BVI Corporation owns an account at UBS Bank in Switzerland. And in that tax year, Salim, the nephew, who was the beneficiary of the trust, he got a 60% of the trust income distribution made to him. And that same year, Hamad, the other nephew, a US person, received the balance of 40% of the trust income. So with that example, we have the multi-million dollar question, who has to report what on their FBAR? So let's look at the trust. We know it's a US person for FBAR purposes. And the question is, what does it have to report? So we said that the trust itself owns this London brokerage account, which is a foreign financial account. It has legal title to that brokerage account. So we know it has to put the brokerage account on the trust's FBAR. What about the Swiss bank account owned by the BVI Corporation, which is fully owned by the trust? So we said the trust owns this BVI company and the shares of the company are not a foreign financial account, but the company itself owns a Swiss bank account. Well, if we go back to our rule, we learn that the trust, being a US person for FBAR, owns over 50% of the shares of the BVI company. In our example, it owns 100%. And therefore, under the rules, when you own over 50% of the shares of a company, you have to report the foreign financial accounts owned by the company. So the trust has a financial interest in the Swiss account owned by the company and has to put that on the trust FBAR. I think that's pretty simple, yeah?
So far, so good.
Okay. Now let's look to the trustee, who is Joanne, who is a US citizen. What does she have to report on her individual FBAR? We know the trust has the London brokerage account. And we said that no matter what, with these US citizen trustees, there's no way they can escape putting the trust's foreign financial accounts on their personal FBAR. So clearly she would have at least signature authority over the London brokerage account as the trustee of the trust. So she's going to have to put that one on her personal FBAR. Now, she's also the only director and officer of the BVI Corporation, which owns the Swiss bank account. So clearly, as the sole director and officer, she will have signature authority over the Swiss account, and she also has to report that on her individual FBAR. I think that's pretty clear?
So far, so good.
Okay, let's move on to our trust beneficiaries. And here we are reminded that the FBAR is an annual form. It needs to be reported and filed every year. So you have to look at your situation every year and determine whether you need to file. This is very important for a U.S. beneficiary who receives trust distributions, because as we mentioned above earlier, the trust beneficiary has to report the trust's financial accounts in any year in which he has over 50% of the beneficial interests in the assets or income of the trust for that particular year. In our example, Solomon received 60% of the trust income in the year in question. So if no exception applied for him, Solomon would have to report the trust's London brokerage account on his individual FBAR. Again, looking back at the rule, the US person is treated under the FBAR rules to have a financial interest in a foreign account for which the owner of record or holder of legal title is a trust from which that US person has a greater than 50% beneficial interest for the calendar year. So the important point is here that he must report the foreign financial accounts for which the owner of record or holder of legal title is a trust. This brings us to the question of what about the Swiss account owned by the BVI company? Does Hamad have to report that as well? The answer would be no, because the rules say he needs to report the foreign accounts in which the owner of record or holder of legal title is a trust from which he has a greater than 50% financial present beneficial interest. And the holder of legal title or owner of record of the Swiss account is not the trust. Remember, it's the BVI corporation. So Solomon only needs to report the London brokerage account on his personal FBAR, because for that year, he received over 50% of the income of the trust. The other nephew, Hamad, he only got 40% of the balance of the trust income. So he would have no FBAR filing duty at all for that year. He has to pay attention every year and find out if he needs to file it another year. There may be the exception that can help if the U.S. beneficiary forgets or doesn't know he needs to file this brokerage account and report it on the FBAR. But that exception will only apply if the trust is created under U.S. law and has a U.S. trustee and either of them have filed an FBAR. So it could be that in our example, if Salem doesn't report it, he will be fine, because the trust is a U.S. trust, so is the trustee, and either of them will hopefully have reported it on the FBAR and take away Solomon's filing duty to report that London brokerage account on his own FBAR. Is that fairly clear?
That is very clear.
Okay. So it's now...
not, but it's very clear.
It's complicated, but hopefully it's clear. Let's just briefly look at the remainderment of this trust. Remember, we said the two nephews, Solomon and Hamad, were the current beneficiaries. And upon the passing of those two, the trust would remain for their children, who they are called the remainderment of the trust. Do they have any filing duty under FBAR to report any of the foreign accounts? The answer would be no, because they do not have a present beneficial interest in the assets or income of the trust for the calendar year. At least they don't have this present beneficial interest while Hamad and Salem are alive. So they have to be very careful and understand what may happen upon the death of these two people. Then the FBAR filing duties will likely kick in for them. Okay.
Which leaves us, I think, with the settler.
Yes. Now, this gets very complicated, I'm afraid to say. The settler or the grantor of the trust. In the simple example, we have Abdullah. He's a non-resident alien, and he's not a U.S. person. So very simple. In that case, he has no FBAR filing duties whatsoever. But what would happen if Abdullah was a U.S. person? What filing duties might he have under FBAR with regard to this entire trust situation? Remember, we discussed that the settlor of a trust will have a financial interest in a foreign account for which the owner of record or holder of legal title is a grantor trust in which that U.S. person has an ownership interest for U.S. tax purposes. So in our example, we said that Abdullah set up a revocable trust. Clearly, that would be what's called a grantor trust. And for U.S. tax purposes, he will be treated as having an ownership interest in the trust. He would be treated as the tax owner of the trust for income tax purposes and taxed on the trust's worldwide income. So the trust essentially would be a disregarded entity when Abdullah is treated as the tax owner. So Abdullah would have to report on his FBAR, the trust's brokerage account, since he would be deemed to have a financial interest in the account in which the trust is the owner of record or the holder of legal title. So this is a personal FBAR filing duty for Abdullah, and it's completely separate from the trust needing to file its own FBAR to report that account. And as we discussed, reporting the account, the Swiss account owned by the BVI company, the trust would need to do that. The question comes in, does Abdullah have a financial interest in this Swiss account that's owned by the BVI company? So is he going to be treated as having some kind of indirect ownership through the trust of over 50% of that BVI corporation? Because remember, let's go back to our rule that said, an individual or a person is treated as having, this is from the first blog post I did on this topic, a U.S. person is treated as having an ownership interest, a financial interest in an account owned by a corporation when the individual or the U.S. person owns over 50% of the corporation. So, and the wording used precisely says whether the ownership is direct or indirect, whether he owns it directly or indirectly. So the question then falls to, does he have an indirect ownership interest because of this ownership through the trust? Is he treated as having an indirect ownership of over 50% of the BVI company? Nothing in the FBAR regulations specifically tells us that because Abdullah owns the trust and the trust owns the BVI company, that Abdullah is deemed under the FBAR rules to own the corporation and therefore must report the Swiss account on his FBAR that is owned by the corporation. But I was not feeling totally comfortable with that because of the way the law reads. It says, again, the U.S. person has a financial interest in a foreign account for which the owner of record or holder of legal title is a corporation in which the U.S. person owns directly or indirectly more than 50% of the total shares of the corporation by vote or value. So what hitched me was this use of the word indirectly. And there's no clear answer. It may possibly mean that for FBAR purposes, Abdullah is treated, we know under the Internal Revenue Code for tax purposes, as owning the shares in the BVI company that are owned by the foreign grantor trust. But for FBAR purposes, it's not clear whether that income tax ownership counts. But use of the word indirectly might mean that it does. We don't know. So if you are very cautious and you want to avoid possible penalties under the FBAR rules, I would say it's probably wise to take a defensive position and that Abdullah, if he's a US person, report the Swiss bank account on his own FBAR. That reporting exception we've talked about, people often think, oh, the reporting exception will prevent him from having to do it. But the reporting exception, again, only applies to a trust beneficiary. It can help the trust beneficiary escape having to report a foreign account if the trust or the trustee is a US person and reports the account on an F-4. It does not offer protection to the trustee or to the grantor creator of the trust. So every word has to be read very carefully when you're dealing with FBAR, because it can be very easy to make a mistake with all of these various rules.
Well, to reiterate though, the method of analysis, and I think this needs to be emphasized, is that the FBAR statute, Title 31, is the dominant statute, and you go to Title 26 only when specifically directed to do so, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And I think that's extremely important. In my experience, people presume that this is all part of the tax rules, Title 26, et cetera. But, the thing is, Virginia, that I don't think that the example that you have hypothesized here is actually all that unusual.
No, it's quite a common one.
It could easily be more complex than what was laid out. And I think this shows you what an incredibly difficult area of law the FBAR law actually is.
That's right. Not to be taken lightly.
No, absolutely not. And, as I listen to you describe this, this is so important. And what it means in American sort of life culture. Do you think it's reached the point where everybody should be denied a high school diploma in America unless they pass a basic course in FBAR?
Oh my goodness. Oh, I don't know.
Well, at the very least, anybody who has anything to do with anything foreign certainly needs to be thinking about FBAR. And, these are amazing posts that you've written, and you're clearly the most notable FBARologist of the 21st century, no question about it.
Oh, thank you, John.
Stuff is very important. Yeah. So what would your advice be to somebody who, just has some vague sense of, oh my God, I'm getting distributions from from a trust that has something to do with some non-USness. What would your advice be?
Well, my advice would be to try and first understand all of these implications we are talking about. So unless the person really enjoys reading this kind of stuff and understanding all of these regulations and parsing through them for hours and hours,
and taking a risk
he may have misread something, his best advice is to get a good U.S. international tax advisor to guide him. That's the first step, to just understand what are the rules? What am I responsible for as whatever my role is? Am I a beneficiary? Am I setting up this trust? Am I the trustee? Get the proper advice. Understand the basic layout. And once you've done that, then you can more clearly take the next step. So if you're a beneficiary of a trust and you're getting a trust distribution, you have no idea whether it's over 50% of the income or assets of the trust. You don't know. So, but you may have to file an FBAR because of it. So the next step would be you go to the trustee and you start asking the trustee pointed questions. So yes, for example, was this over 50% of the income or assets of the trust for that year, my distribution? And maybe the trustee will answer, maybe not. If they don't answer, the next question can be, is the trustee a U.S. person and reporting it on an FBAR, or is this trust set up under U.S. law? You might know that and reporting it on an FBAR. It's to know you meet the exception. A lot of times, people don't want beneficiaries of trusts to have too much information. So there's probably going to be some pushback.
Well,
and you can't just willy-nilly put on an FBAR, foreign account, I don't know which bank, I don't know which. They want details. They want the account number. So, you know, if you're not going to get help from the trustee in getting this information, I don't know what you do.
It isn't the message to stay away from anything that's foreign, meaning non-U.S.
It's a wonderful rule if you can live by it.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been, I don't know, certainly enlightening. I feel nervous after just having listened to all this, I must say. I think perhaps, you know, so that's this week's citing of Mr. FBAR, which I think reminds us of the fundamental rule, which is report early, report often, report everything, and by God, keep a record of what you report. But maybe we now need a fifth rule, and that is find out what everybody else is reporting. What do you think?
That's not a bad one. If you're a beneficiary of a trust, it might be good.
Well, all Don, right. I think people have got to say something about this.
I direct your listeners to the blog posts that I've written on this to get more clarity because, you know, I do understand it's a lot of information to absorb, especially if you're just listening as opposed to going back and reading it again and again. At least I operate better with the written word than I do when I am listening.
And the blog address is, want to give it to everybody?
Sure, why not? www.us-tax.org, O-R-G. And I have a whole category. I have blog post categories, and there is a special one dedicated to Mr. FBAR. So you can go in there and read all the posts and understand everything you need to know about Mr. FBAR.
And we will certainly be back soon when we have another sighting of Mr. FBAR, right?
Yes, absolutely. And just to calm everyone down, if after listening to the podcast or reading some of the blog posts, you find that things have not been reported properly on an FBAR or you haven't been reporting and filing an FBAR at all, the IRS does have a program where these things can most likely be fixed without any imposition of penalties, but you need to address it before they come to you, because once they come to you, it's very difficult to get out from under the penalty box. So take action if you find something is wrong. And of course, I'm here to assist if you need help. And don't panic.
All right. I mean, it's hard to not, you know, to avoid the don't panic after listening to this sort of stuff. But anyway, all right, Virginia, this is great. Thank you so much. And I look forward to catching up with you when we have the next sighting of the elusive Mr. FBAR.
Okay. I look forward to speaking to you again soon as well.
Thanks.